I'm Jeannie Allen, and this is Reality Check. Reality Check is produced by National Review and is one of more than a dozen podcasts offered on the National Review online website. If you'd like a free subscription to the podcast so that you never miss a program, simply sign up at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or TuneIn. Hi, and welcome to Reality Check. This is Jeannie Allen, and I am thrilled to introduce another amazing guest today, Laura Sandifer. Laura and her husband, Jeff, co-founded Acton Academy, a network of more than 70 schools and growing with locations in the U.S., Canada, South Africa, Central and South America, India and Malaysia. She's also the author of Courage to Grow, How Acton Academy Turns Learning Upside Down, and she and her amazing team of guides, which you will learn about when you read this book, are turning learning upside down with some remarkable new and not so new approaches. I am so excited, Laura, to have you here to talk about some of these approaches, your philosophy, your thoughts about why learning has to be turned upside down, and education in general, which is near and dear to the hearts of all of our listeners. So welcome.
Thank you so much. It is a true honor to be with you. You are one of my heroes. And so this is just a real pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, you're welcome. And I'm flattered. I am always a huge fan of anyone who decides to roll up their sleeves and create new learning opportunities for our students. And there is just so much more that we need to be doing today, particularly in the face of a system that looks a lot like the ones that our founding fathers attended. So sad to think about.
So, yes.
And I think we share the foundational belief that that education system is not appropriate now, right? It's not just completely outdated, it's broken, right? Our test scores show it, adult illiteracy rates confirm it, and certainly our lack of college and career readiness are putting us at a global disadvantage. So how are you addressing that, and why did you jump into this?
Yes. So not only is it broken, it's actually irrelevant. And what the reason we stepped into this journey, we actually never really planned to do this. Both Jeff and I come from education backgrounds in various ways, but it wasn't until we had children of our own and we were facing the choice of having to move them from their pre-K Montessori environment into a traditional elementary school, because that school we were in did not have an upper elementary, we were faced with a choice. And what we saw was just, to us, inadequate for what we knew our young boys would need when they faced the world when they were 18 and 21 years old. Mm-hmm. So we literally said, let's just start from scratch. Let's start with a blank piece of paper and dream up our dream school, a school that would launch our children into the world fully equipped to find a calling and change the world and live a real life of meaning. So what we did is we actually, in a way, are a throwback to those very ancient and early American ways of learning. So we pulled in the Socratic method from very early times, where asking questions is far more powerful than delivering information. So we grabbed that. Then we added in the idea of apprenticeships. We mm-hmm. believe that real world work is one of the best teachers around. And so we wanted our children to have experience working in the real world as a part of their learning journey. And then at the same time, so we were doing this, it was almost a decade ago. It was 2009 when we opened our doors.
Wow.
And at that time, online learning was really becoming something. So SouthCon, you know, Khan Academy was around. There were wonderful online learning programs for math and grammar. And we saw the opportunity in that technology, that it's, you know, the self-paced element of it, its adaptive abilities, and the idea of mastery was something that we wanted to integrate into our model. We also realized that we needed a narrative. Children need to know why they're learning something, and it needs to be really relevant to their world, not right. what we think their worlds should be. So the narrative of the hero's journey is something that really sets Acton Academy apart, because everything we do is based on this story that really kind of haunts the human soul, that our life, each human life is meant to be purposeful in the world, that we have inner gifts, and the idea of going out on an adventure to discover treasure, face monsters, and come back home as a changed person in order to do something great, that haunts six-year-olds as much as it does 60-year-olds. And so, you know, whether it's Star Wars with Luke Skywalker and the Force, or Harry Potter against Lord Voldemort, or Sir Lancelot chasing the Holy Grail, we knew we could hook children into this storyline, and it works because we truly believe that each child has genius within. So we invite them into the adventure, and all of our learning challenges are based not only on knowledge and skills and things you need to learn how to do in the real world. It's also built around the things you need to learn as a human being, how to be in relationship, how to ask for forgiveness, how to receive feedback and give feedback, how to fight the monsters of resistance and distraction and victimhood when you feel stuck in your learning. So pulling those elements, wrapping the hero's journey around it, that's what we started with. And we started with just seven children in a small rented space in Austin, Texas, had absolutely no desire for it to go much beyond that because we were in heaven. We were, you know, doing learning as we thought it should be, and our children were having a blast. And then some parents, you know, from other places would come visit us and walk through our school and say, gosh, Laura and Jeff, could we do this in our own hometown? And we said, sure. So we put together a kit, not really knowing what we were doing. The first person, a dear friend in Guatemala City, Juan Bonifaci, we basically handed him a stack of papers and said, you know, here are our quests, our projects, and the learning tools we use, and go at it. And what he created was even better than what we had. So we thought, gosh, this collaboration is amazing. Long story short, we counted up just last night because it's getting a little out of control. We have 89 Acton Academies now. Oh, I know, opening up, and hundreds of applications we're receiving every week from parents who are entrepreneurs who want to join us and open a small micro school in their community that uses the same tools that we've pulled together.
And these are entrepreneurs, right? So I was fortunate to be able to visit you in Austin when you happened to be having an event to bring together some of your founders or prospective founders of schools. And one of the things that struck me the most, beyond getting at least a little taste of what it is you're all about, is how entrepreneurial everyone was there. It was high octane, big energy, lots of questions, lots of interaction, the ability to talk to one another, and this notion that you hit on that helping our students, our kids, our adults, frankly, is needed as well, who didn't have these benefits, really navigate those monsters. I love the way you call it, those challenges. And so let me invite you to help us navigate something that I think is near and dear to my heart and critical, I think, for the next generation of learners. So while Acton Academy and Laura and her husband, Jeff, for our listeners, again, if you just happen to walk away and come back to your podcast, are founders of Acton Academy. And Acton is a private school model. Frankly, so much more can happen in the private than the public sector. But that said, we took a group of people up to the Hill recently to talk with staffers about how to understand personalized student-centered learning. And we had a student there from a public school called Iowa Big that has a very small number of students. This kid had been basically pushed around, shoved, considered misbehaving, not a fit for any traditional school. They thought he was just a bad guy. And here, this young gentleman, he is more articulate than most people in most positions of authority. And he's been he wants to be an architect. He's been creating an entire infrastructure for the city of Cedar Rapids that was just apparently adopted by them. And one of the staffers in the room a couple of them actually kept saying, okay, but I don't understand. How do they learn? Like, there was this blockage that prevented someone from understanding. They're like, okay, maybe that can happen in high school, but what do you do with little kids? Little kids are going to just figure out their own learning path. And I realized as I walked away, Laura, and this is where I need your help, there's an entire, probably the vast majority of people who are in public policy or even just real folks who can't quite envision how you turn learning upside down and still ensure learning if there's not a traditional pathway. So help me understand how we engage and educate people to get the fact that students can, in fact, help be part of their own learning process.
It's a really great question, and I'm going to do my best to answer it. In a way, I just want to say you have to trust and see it to believe it, but that's not very helpful because not everyone's going to come and observe a group of children doing this. But there is science behind this. And the work of Maria Montessori is actually very fundamental in what we do. So she was a scientist and observed how children function and work. And when you think of children, we're born as natural learners. And children don't give up when they fall down when they're learning to walk. They get up and do it again. It's only over time and by people trying to put them into boxes that a fear-based mentality sets in, or they have a fixed mindset that they can't learn and they're not good at something. But Maria Montessori started all of this of really, if you can set up an environment that allows children to make choices in a way that matters to them, choices in their work even, they become very engaged. And the minute a child starts feeling small steps of progress towards specific goals, that's the engagement, surprisingly, that really makes them want to move forward. Learning is fun. It's really, really hard, but it's really, really fun when you want to do it. The truth is, humans want to learn. That's how we're created. The system we have found ourselves in strips some of that away and makes curiosity, you know, something that doesn't help you, it actually hurts you. And it makes making mistakes also set you back. So what we did is create an environment where making mistakes is part of the learning process. It's that growth mindset ideal and skill set that you start understanding what children can do by giving them very specific progressive steps that they help develop along the way. And frankly, get out of the role of being a deliverer of information, but provide a game-like environment that that sets them free to make choices within that environment.
So very much Carol Dweck kind of helped coin that term, right? Growth mindset.
Yes.
And
yes.
So there is that science and research there. And then, you know, Angela Duckworth,
yes,
who kind of gave popularity to the word grit. And I think that those two really, really kind of undergird what you're saying in so many ways, Laura. You're putting to work what they just discovered. I mean, they didn't create it, but they discovered that it's not about intelligence. It's not even about aptitude, that those two things actually can flow from hard work. And exactly what you said, learning actually is fun, but it's hard. And that path and that journey to persistence, that grit that you need, can push you farther and faster. But that same thing, that kind of individual, aggressive sometimes, active, engaged learner in a classroom that's sitting 25 in rows or even in tables. I think sometimes tables cooperative, like you've seen these tables, you're like, hey, we're collaborating, they're tables. No, you're really not. You're talking to each other about the same pace and the same level. And I think that's where people have a hard time grasping it. You're right, you have to see it. But then they go, well, who's guiding them? Who's making sure they have the right information? I mean, are you guys making sure that your kids get geometry? Are you making sure that they've, I don't know, read about the Incas or the Amazon?
Well, all of these things, first of all, to throw one more element into what you just said, the online learning releases content and sets it up in a way that children can work at their own pace. So that's an important element besides just letting them make choices. But yes, what we do, and we're just a small experiment. We don't have the answers for everyone. I want to put that out there. This is just something, and I mean, I feel like we're at the tip of the iceberg of what we're learning every day about how children learn and what human motivation is. So
that's great.
Please, I'm not an expert, but we really think that game making is a critical element to learning, because to learn something, you need feedback. So you need to be within a community where you get real feedback on a regular basis. Nothing's worse than just trying to learn something in isolation. So the combination of online learning plus a community that's bound by really hard boundaries, we have contracts that the children have written for each other that they sign and they hold each other accountable. If you cross over a boundary, you actually get asked to leave the community until you can choose to come back in. The idea is there's an ethos around wanting to be there, wanting to do something that's important for the world, and the content of learning then becomes just part of the journey. So we give them frameworks and tools to learn how to learn, so they can learn about the Incas if they're interested in it. We pose really tough questions and then set them free to go do the research to come back and discuss them together. They go through wonderful cycles of civilization, learning all about from ancient times up through modern history, and they go through cycles. But how they do it is by analyzing decisions that humans have to make and standing in their shoes and reliving these decisions. So they're learning frameworks for decision making. They're learning processes to learn anything. So I don't care what the subject is, what the skill is, they learn that they can do anything. So there are content areas that we're sure to cover, because yes, biology and physics, those are wonderful, but we set them up in a way that it's a real world skill. So to learn biology, for example, we have a 5-week or 6-week quest. We go through multi-week quests that are our courses, and the children are doing simulation of real world problems in order to learn the concepts. So to learn how the body works, there might be an accident, a car accident, and they have to come upon these patients in the road and learn, you know, what to do to take the heart rate, mm-hmm. to bind a wound, all these different things. So it's really hands-on learning, but with measurable steps along the way, so that they can track exactly what they're learning and see where they're progressing. So feedback, tools and processes that they can use, and then a clear map so they know where they're going. Those are all really integrated. I think there's some misconceptions about a school like Acton Academy that it's all, you know, since children make choice, it's all about play and right. they're swinging from the trees half the time. The truth is, it's actually very rigorous, and the goals they have to set and measure every day and then every week and then over a period of a session are very trackable and measurable.
And so they're guided in that by a teacher?
Yeah.
And do you have standards that are part of your kit or suggested curriculum? For example, the woman who's starting one not too far from us, I believe, in Virginia, would she be helping augment what you give her, or they have to stick to a kit?
Yes. So two things. First of all, yes, our network is highly collaborative. So we are just one of all these other people. Once again, we're not the experts. We provide a kit, a general, you know, first grade through senior year in high school program. You could use ours. At the same time, everyone's innovating and providing their feedback on what's working great and things they've tried. So it's constantly evolving and growing and improving. Secondly, your question about guides. We believe, you know, the idea that magical teacher must exist in order for learning to happen. Yes, teachers are critical, and we love the concept of teaching. Our definition of what a teacher is, though, is different than most traditional definitions, because we believe teachers come in all shapes and sizes and ages. So we think a 6-year-old is a fantastic teacher to a 4-year-old. And our 16-year-olds, oh my goodness, you should see how they guide and mentor the younger children. So our adults are called guides because we have them under strict guidelines as far as our methods go. And because it's a Socratic environment, our adults are not deliverers of information. They are not allowed to answer questions. They are allowed to give options, to give frameworks and challenges, to set up the environment, and then they step back and the children, mixed ages, all working together, must achieve certain goals in order to progress. And it's based on mastery. So you ask the question, how they move forward, or if we have a curriculum. And the answer is yes, but it's based on earning badges. So we have an elementary school badge program. In order to get to middle school, you have to master a certain level of math, reading, writing, and do the what we call learning to be badges. So they're learning how to mentor each other, how to hold a Socratic discussion, how to make decisions. And then same thing for middle school and high school. In fact, this year we're so excited. We're graduating our first seniors at our campus.
I was going to ask you. Yeah.
Yes. And so they've got accepted to every college they applied to. And
really?
With full merit scholarships. We're just really excited. We just want them to be happy and find their calling and change the world. But it was very satisfying to know that our badges are recognized as, can be recognized in a traditional college.
Well, so let me ask you about that, because that is a big debate currently, not just among colleges and universities, certainly when it comes to public policy. Could this be a model for measuring competency?
Absolutely. Measuring competency for us is actually pretty easy, because can you do it or can you not? And we have regular exhibitions and publications of their work that it's very evident whether a child can do something or not. So
do they have a portfolio that they also submit?
They have a portfolio of work. Every single thing they've written, from the draft level through the final product, is saved and collected. We have hundreds and hundreds of pieces of work for each child. So if a traditional college admissions officer wanted to see every piece of work a child has written, they could click on, we have a software program that collects all this, like Google Docs does, and it's all saved. It's all right there. And the wonderful thing is you can see the progression, because you see the drafts, you see how many rewrites there were. So we can translate all of that into a traditional transcript.
Interesting.
But it's much more interesting to see the actual work. I mean, that's why we're just like, gosh, how are people satisfied with just grades? When you can see a child's work, it's so much more exciting and interesting.
And it's just fascinating, because you really are bringing together all of the things that people are finally realizing are critical to learning. You're bringing together the notion of mastery, of the learning process being so much more engaged and active, of being interesting, that whole notion of apprenticeships. If I hear the apprenticeship word one more time on the national stage, that I'm going to die, because it's just, they're not talking about the way you're talking about. They're talking about it like in the old school way.
Mm.
And by the way, there might be nothing wrong with that, but there could be so much more, as you're just indicating. But I imagine that the other kind of checkbox that you're ticking off is this notion of being able to know what you want to do with your career. So why is school relevant to what you're doing? And are these students, as they're looking at colleges, already thinking they know what they want to do, more so than most?
Yes. Yes. And in fact, we have part of one of the projects they do every year during their high school time with us is, we call it Your Next Adventure. It's the name of a week-long project. They're constantly thinking about what they want to do. My son, for example, he's a freshman in high school. He's always since he was a little boy, loved puzzles, loved taking things apart. His apprenticeships have been at car mechanics places. Long story short, he is an engineer at heart. So already as a freshman, he's done all the testing on this gift and this aptitude. He knows he wants to go to college in an engineering school. He doesn't know which kind of engineering yet. So now he's seeking apprenticeships. He's thinking it's industrial engineering. So they are pursuing in detail what their next path will be. They also do a finance and personal finance quest. At the same time, they're knowing how much money they're going to need to live in the real world. And do they want to take on debt? Do they not? They're making financial decisions about their future, as well as very specific questions about where they want to go, who they want their teachers to be. We're thinking, why not find the best teachers in the country or the world and seek those people out to work under, rather than just a gigantic school. You're not exactly sure why you want to go. So they're being very streamlined. And one of our graduates, who got accepted to every place she applied, and she'll probably go out to UC San Diego because she really wants to live on the West Coast, but she wants to take a gap year to be a consultant for people who are starting micro schools because she knows how to do it. And she could run our campus. She could open an Acton Academy right now. These young people are so highly responsible, highly capable, highly ambitious. They are readers, they are writers, they are thinkers. And since she was one of our founding students back in 2009, and when she very first started, you could barely hear her voice. She didn't want to speak in discussions. That's one thing. Every day, twice a day, these young people are in deep Socratic discussions. They learn to find their voice. They learn how to speak persuasively but concisely. They learn how to be agreed with and disagreed with and not take it personally, but respond. They know how to give evidence. They are amazing humans. And it's because they have taken charge of their learning.
Of their own education.
Yes.
And they are able to steward that.
Yes.
And as you started off the top of the conversation, make it relevant. Mm-hmm. Well, I knew this conversation would fly by. I've got to ask you one more question before we cut and run. Joseph Campbell has been a great inspiration to you, I understand. And I'm tickled because I'm dating myself now, but I remember there used to be like a Sunday night program in our area that my husband and I would watch, The Power of Myth, and he would.
Yes.
It was the most fascinating thing I'd ever seen. It picked up the book, and I've not followed it since then. Why is he your inspiration?
He's my inspiration because he pulled together all the great stories of all humankind and found that there is one narrative that calls us all together, and his thoughts ring so deeply true. And my favorite thought of his is something that we run our school by. And he says this, he said this, the cave you fear to enter holds the treasure you seek. Mm-hmm. So the idea is you've got to go where it scares you, mm-hmm. and that's where your treasure lies. And I love Joseph Campbell's work so, so much. It still inspires me on a daily basis.
I just love that. That's fantastic, Laura. Great way to end an amazing, but all too brief podcast. It has been my pleasure to speak with Laura Sandifer, the co-founder of Acton Academy, author of Courage to Grow. You can find out more about the school, the book, Laura and Jeff, her husband, and even find a school nearby at Acton Academy. That's actonacademy.org. And I just can't thank you enough for joining me. Thank you so much, Laura. And for Reality Check, I'm Jeannie Allen. Don't forget to follow me at Jeannie Allen on Twitter. Follow Ed Reform, the Center for Education Reform, at Ed Reform. And again, Laura, thank you so much for joining us on another Reality Check.
Thank you.
Reality Check is a podcast produced by National Review and posted at nationalreview.com. If you like what you heard in this podcast, and I hope you did, you might want to subscribe for free and make sure you don't miss any future programs. You can subscribe at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn. And you can also find much more about education reform, opportunity, and innovation at the Center for Education Reform's website, edreform.com.